Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, three composers, Mr. Mark Killian, Kevin Kiner, and Andrew Lockington. It's a film composing night tonight on Movie Geeks United. Movie Geeks United. We are very excited to bring you the show tonight. I think Film Composing Month has officially began.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I want to let everyone know, all the film composing fans out there, if you're new to the show, check out our archives, because we have some great interviews with people like Howard Shore and Mark Isham and Mark Mancina and John Ottman. And John Ottman actually calling us from the Berlin set of Valkyrie. Which was very interesting, sometime last year.
Yeah,
it's amazing how time flies.
Yeah, I mean,
time flies when you're talking.
You got them all.
That's true. It's kind of like a specialty of ours now.
Yeah.
Which is great, because I'm crazy about, we both are, we're crazy
about
film.
Yeah, well, I would say all of us are definitely crazy about film scores.
Yeah, have you been collecting for, I mean, have you collected in your...
Well, I have a lot in vinyl, actually, up till, I started collecting, I guess, in the late 70s, just, you know, the usual stuff, like the Star Wars stuff and everything that you get as a little kid, and
right.
Then in the 80s, you know, I actually have some old, like, James Bond soundtracks on vinyl, which is really odd. I was buying vinyl up until 87.
Wow.
So, I mean, but I have some, like, stuff on vinyl, and I have tons of stuff on CD. Actually, there's some years where I just only bought soundtracks. Nothing else.
That's a lot of times, you know, that's a lot of times what I will purchase. It's, you know, I'm always on the lookout for the rarities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I'm one of those geeks too. God
bless
us.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us, I noticed that on this, you know, on our show, and, you know, a lot of people confess to that, but it's not as, like, I used to be given a hard time by a lot of people, including my brother, why would you ever buy, like, the soundtrack to a movie? And, you know, this is back in the 80s, I guess, the late 80s, and, you know, it just made sense to me. I liked the music so much, and
yeah, it's,
a lot
it's,
of the classical music I liked, you know, sounded like movie music, whether it be Prokofiev or Shostakovich, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It just sounded, it had a movie soundtrack, like, vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's there's just exceptional works, and, I mean, I'm crazy about all the composers. Yeah. And, of course, I'm crazy about our three composers that we have on this
evening.
Yeah, we
have three unique guys on tonight, so...
Yeah, very different musical voices, and this is going to be very exciting. What do you say we get to it? Before we get to it, let me let people know there is a chat room, all you film composing fans and movie geek fans. Log into our chat room, click the chat available icon on the homepage. It'll take you directly to the chat room where you can converse with other film fans just like you. And if you have any questions, you can call into our show at 718-508-9477. And you can also purchase the scores the latest scores from the three guests tonight by clicking on the appropriate icons on the homepage where you are now. It'll take you directly to Amazon where you can purchase those scores. All bases covered. We've got people taken care of tonight. All right, our first guest tonight was born and raised in South Africa, where he became a highly influential and accomplished jazz musician. In the mid-90s, he set his sights on film composing and has since created masterful scores for pictures like Rendition and Before the Rains and television series such as Daybreak and Jake in Progress. His unique musical vocabulary combines South African music, jazz, electronica, and modern classical music to create a sound that is unlike any other. His new work can be heard in the new film Traitor, starring Don Cheadle and Guy Pearce. Last week, we interviewed the writer-director of that film, Mr. Jeffrey Nachimoff, and this is what he had to say about our guest tonight.
Yeah, Mark Killian was
was terrific. I went off and I shot the movie and I came back and I put together the very first rough of it and I started meeting with composers. There were some really talented people out there and I was incredibly flattered that they came and met with me. You know, these are people that have done 50, 100 films, I don't know. And Mark was someone I had heard literally a music to a soundtrack to a movie called Before the Rains, which was a small film. And it was being played when I was watching dailies. Someone put the disc in the, you know, while we were watching the dailies one day. And I just said, whose music is that? It just fits so well with the, you know, with what we're looking at. And they said, it's this guy, Mark Killian. And he doesn't have a huge amount of, you know, films under his belt. But I met with them and immediately realized that this guy just got this film. And he has a really organic way of working. He'll ask him when he comes on your show. Ask him about. We went up to, you know, he composed it. We used a lot of African and Middle Eastern instruments, but also we used some very synthetic and really. He uses a lot of really creative instruments, like found objects and metal and car jacks and springs and all sorts of things to build the soundtrack. But we went to Seattle to score it, and there's this one moment I can't forget. We're on the scoring stage. He's got something like 50 string players in front of him, and he's conducting. Sort of in a 360 arc, like waving his arms around, just getting them to play notes that are not normally possible on the violin and the viola. and I took like a little teeny video of it. It's pretty amazing. But he's like that. He just is so creative and he takes chances and gives you something really fresh. And I love the soundtrack that we have for the movie.
Awesome. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Mark Killian. Mr. Killian, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us tonight. It's a pleasure to speak with you, sir. So you were born and raised in South Africa, as we mentioned. When did music become a part of your life? Did you come from a musical family?
I didn't, actually, and I was, somewhat interested in music as a kid. I wouldn't say it was consuming. That only started later on after I left school and I did military service, and it was around that time. That was about when I was 18, 19, that it really started becoming a compulsion for me.
And what? And who were you? Who were you first drawn to? And what do you think it did to you? Did for you? Why you were drawn to it?
Well, it was initially I was about performance, so it was jazz that I was drawn to, and I was a jazz pianist, and I studied that as my bachelor. But then I started becoming more interested in the electronic in the We had an electronic studio at the university in Durban, and I started becoming interested in the modular synthesizers there. So slowly I started becoming more interested in composition. But it wasn't really until I came to America to USC that that I really got my hands dirty and got into it, film music.
Yeah, I definitely want to ask you about USC. We've spoken to Mark Isham and Terrence Blanchard, and these are two musicians that really utilize jazz in their film scoring.
Right.
Is jazz conducive to film scoring? Is there a comparison there?
If I were to teach a class in film scoring, I would probably stress improvisation more than anything else. Because I think what I learned about improvising in the jazz world has stood me in really good stead for film composition. So I think in that regard, definitely. I'm still waiting for a jazz score. I'd love to be able to do a jazz score one day.
Yeah. What kind of genres do you think would fit best with a jazz type score?
Well, they just seem to be less and less,
than
there were 10, 20, 30 years ago. Now it's like a handful of movies every year that have some sort of jazz element, and that's about it seems.
Yeah. So tell me, you went when you came to the States, as you said, you attended USC, or the graduate program, I think, scoring for motion pictures and television at USC.
Correct.
What did that do for you? What did that awaken in you? What did you learn?
It was something that it was very expensive, and exchange rate at that time was terrible. So yeah, it's something I saved up for years, and I got scholarships and. It took me many, many years to actually get here. So when I got here, my eyes were just huge because not only was this Los Angeles and Hollywood, this was, coming to the best school of its kind in the world. And, people like Christopher Young, who were heroes to me, suddenly were my teachers. And, So it was fantastic. I mean, it really was amazing, and I think, you know, everything in my career has really come from there. I can trace everything back to there somehow.
Did they teach you about, because film composing goes beyond just the notes? I mean, you are a storyteller in a sense. Did they teach you anything about how to read films or how to decipher the story elements of a picture?
Yes, I did. I mean, we had a lot of varying courses. I would say the notes part of the course was something you kind of had to get in the door, as it were. Mm-hmm. And yes, we learned an awful lot about orchestration, but that was because we had sessions every single week almost. We had to write a little piece for a little clip of film, and each one of our lecturers gave us a little clip of film. So we had these projects all the time. But I think what was really special about the course was all the anecdotal stuff. Christopher Young sitting there talking about, when he started out, and, we had all sorts of people coming in, not only composers, but, music editors, orchestrators, some fantastic people. And I just ate all that stuff up. I mean, for me, that's where I learned about, what being a composer really means and how to get under the skin of a film.
Yeah, and you did you apprentice? I guess that's the word for it. Under Christopher Young, following USC, or was it?
It was actually right towards the end of USC, because while I was here, the exchange rate between my currency back in South Africa and here slipped a great deal, and I all of a sudden didn't have enough money to finish the course. Mm. I called Chris up and said, hey, you need anything? You got any work going on or anything? And just so happened, his assistant had left him the day before. So he hired me on Tales from the Hood, I think it was called. And that was really my first working experience, and it enabled me to stay and finish the course.
Mm. Tell me about his working process.
He has a very different process to a lot of other composers I know. He's very much a hands-on the piano and pen and paper kind of guy. Most other composers I know sit and write behind a computer. And, I still don't think he does that even today. He's still a pen and paper guy as far as I'm aware, but definitely then he was. And I learned so much about, the process of writing the way we learned at USC was about click tracks and calculators. And that was great. I mean, you have to know that knowledge. You have to have that. You have to be armed with that. But when I started seeing how Chris worked, he just had this metronome machine there. He looked at the scene. He didn't line anything up. He just, hit the button on the metronome, more or less where he wanted the music to start. And, basically it was just like that. And he sort of matched things up to picture off the cuff. And I think what I realized from that is, it's really not about the mechanics. The emotion is the most important thing. Get that down, and then you can deal with mechanics later. That should come secondary.
Yeah. So Christopher Young was obviously an experience and an influence on you. Tell me about some of your other influences and some of your personal favorite scores by your favorite film composers.
I would say I think Bernard Herrmann would probably be one of my most favorite film composers.
Mm-hmm.
I love Thomas Newman's work. I love Jerry Goldsmith's work.
Mm-hmm.
The Omen is one of my favorite scores.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Really love both of the first two, actually. Great.
Mm-hmm.
So you work both in, you've worked both in television and film. Is there a difference in discipline or the actual semantics of scoring for those two mediums?
There are differences, absolutely, but there are also similarities, and it really depends on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, just the sheer volume of work you have to do for a TV show, episodic television anyway, is sets it apart. You just have, a great amount of music to get done every week, and you don't have the time to research and to think and you know, process and try a scene three different ways before you're happy with the way it's working out. You just don't have
right.
the time to do that. So it's more, it's kind of like, you know, going back to improvisation, what we were talking about earlier. You just have to fly.
Yeah.
But other than that, really, it's really the same, you know, the same discipline.
And you worked in commercial, you did some commercial work as well.
Right.
Companies, big companies like Apple and so on, I believe.
Right.
That must be very difficult. Is that a, do you have to just come up with a very simple, quick theme? It has to be very, very quick and compact. Is that the difficulty of composing
That's
for
the difficulty
commercial?
Of it. Yeah, exactly. It's something that I, when I got into it, thought, you know, I was above commercials. I never watched them. I didn't care for them. I didn't really want to have anything to do with it. But at the time, you know, the money attracted me. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And then I learned that very quickly that, wow, this is not as easy as it seems. You have, really have to get your idea across in, you know, in a very short space of time.
Mm-hmm.
So your idea has to be very succinct and very compact and very effective. You know, I think I learned a great deal from doing that.
I bet. Let's talk about Traitor. I'm crazy about this movie. Speaking to the director last week, we kind of showered him with praise. Cause,
yeah. We'll shower you with praise, too. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. And the scoring is exceptional. Do you mind if we play the main theme to give our audience a sense of what we're talking about here, and then we'll talk about the thought process that went into creating it?
Right, please do.
Okay. Here it is. Here's the main title theme for Traitor. So tell me the thought process here. You sit down. First of all, when do you come in on a project?
You know, I think it's always different. I've been kind of lucky the last couple of film scores that I've been able to come in quite early in the process. In Traitor, my first meeting with them was while they were still shooting, but I was, you know, hired on the project before, you know, while they were still editing, quite way before they were finished editing. So, you know, Rendition and Tsotsi, I was, Paul and I were both on that from the beginning, from before the shooting. So that was unusual.
So what do you have to understand before those opening notes come to you, before that theme starts to formulate?
I like to, you know, get inside the movie in a sense. I'm kind of like a method composer. I devour, you know, when I was working on an Indian movie, I just ate Indian food, and I went to India and recorded Indian instruments, and all I do on my iPod is have Indian music. So I kind of do that, and I sort of did that with Traitor 2. I spend the first, you know, the first couple of weeks really researching. So with Traitor, I went, you know, there's a couple of places all over town where you can buy, you know, eccentric musical instruments and things like that. So I go shopping and pick out what really speaks to me and try and learn to play it. For example, on Traitor, I picked up a suz, an Egyptian suz, and sort of taught myself to play it a little bit. And so all the suz work on the score is me playing. So I try and get into the head of the movie, and, you know, invariably I just find that after I've thrown up pieces of music at different scenes that just speak to me, something will start emerging organically from it, which is something that doesn't, that you really are not afforded that on working on television. So that's one of the differences, going back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Well, I would think that with this score, there has to be some kind of, I guess it's maybe the, there has to be some kind of propulsion, because it is a thriller, so you need to have the thriller aspect of it. You need to express somehow the duality of this character, and it's a little bit of the paranoia. Tell me some more of the themes and the elements that you needed to express musically, and how you chose to do that.
Well, right from the beginning, I knew that there was going to be percussion was going to be a very important element here, and what I wanted to do was to turn everything on its head, in a sense, to help express that duality and the paranoia and all that. So, for example, I hired a room full of percussion, and not all of it was percussion instruments. Some of it was, you know, we had like a whole set of artillery shells and metal plates and springs and just all sorts of crazy stuff. And then I hired four percussionists, all different kinds of strengths. For example, one guy's a rock drummer that I've used in other scores, who's just has amazing fingers. And one guy was North African guy. But what I did with them was have them play stuff that they're not used to. So the North African guy, for example, and, you know, he's a great dumbek player and what have you. So I just had him play everything other than dumbek. You know, just try to remove him from his comfort zone.
Right.
And we did a lot of work with little things too. I, you know, use a lot of Cajun spoons and little triangle beaters on a marimba or a vibraphone, and getting really close with the miking. So you're not really sure what instruments they are. For a great part of it.
Right.
Nothing is really as it seems, which is perfect, I think, for this kind of paranoia that we're trying to get in the film.
Absolutely. I mean, that describes the film right there. You know, you mentioned the different sounds that you get from these different kind of crazy items you use as instruments, and Mr. Nachmanoff spoke to it as well. What does that do for you? Because I think you're very unique in that I don't think a lot of composers think outside the box as you do in terms of what they can use to create a musical landscape. What do these different elements do for the score? What kind of feeling does it give it?
I think in a way it, you know, the more, like if I'd taken a very traditional approach on the score, I don't think it would have felt as organic to the film as it does when you try and get inside the film and then you don't put music on top of it. You just let the music come out of the pores of the film. And I
right.
think, you know, for, in a film like this anyway, the, you know, the way to do that was to think outside of the box. And sound is always something that has really intrigued me. And I'm my happiest when I, you know, buy an instrument and learn to play it and then mess it up so badly that no one can recognize it. that's where I'm really my happiest. And you know, I always strive to try and turn things up and down a little bit. You know, even on Before the Rains, which is a much more traditional type of score, even there I was trying to do some of that kind of stuff.
Do you, as a musician, do you... is everything musical for you? I mean, when you hear sounds that we hear, do they play musical in some fashion for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm... when I was in South Africa in December when I got the call to submit demos for Traitor, and I couldn't. Well, I could have come back, but you know I don't get to spend much time with my parents, so I was there with a laptop. I didn't have any of my sound libraries. I had nothing. I just had my laptop with Logic on it, and I was like, okay, well, I have to make this work. So I set out to 3 days of recording, and basically, what I recorded was, you know, my dad and my girlfriend and myself just taking all sorts of things from the garage and sampling them, like even, you know, power saws and drills and paint cans. You know, we had a range of different bottles which we filled with different, you know, different amounts of water so that we could build these little choirs. And I sampled all of this, and over a period of 3 days, I built up a library of sound. And then I composed a few pieces using just those sounds. So that kind of thing I've done a lot before on Tsotsi, and you know I do a little bit of that on pretty much every movie. You know that's really intriguing to me. I really enjoy that process, and I try and use that same thinking cap when it comes to working with orchestra. You know I still feel like I have a long way to go before I'm going to be satisfied because you know the orchestra. Not something you can play with every day.
Right.
Would be lovely if you could.
Yeah, that would be a dream. So what's next for you? You have any films upcoming? I know you have I think you're working on your second solo CD now. Did I read that correctly?
Yes, correct. The first one I'm still trying to get out there, so I'm getting close to having that out there. And yeah, so I'm working on the second one, and I've just finished another movie, and just on one at the moment as well. Yeah, I might also have a TV show coming up next year, so early next year.
Do you find that you can exercise different sets of muscles with some of these films when you approach with a project? Do you look for the challenge of that project? And for instance, what was the challenge and what was unique for you about working on Traitor?
The challenge was, well, I mean, firstly, it's the biggest film I've done on my own. Working with that level with you know, someone like Jeffrey, who's just one of the most fabulous, collaborators, he's just fantastic, and really had such a great experience. And the whole process was amazing. But I think you know, for me, the challenge was to try and come up with a voice that did work with the film in a very organic way, and you know, at least strove to try and be a little original, so that it wasn't really a sort of more traditional type of film score.
Right.
And I always look for, I'm really, I have an absolute phobia about being pigeonholed. So I'm trying my very best to take different movies every time. And also I love learning, you know, stuff like this film I'm working on now. I'm learning about Latino music, and the one I just finished, it was all about gospel, you know, African American gospel music.
Wow.
And there's also, you know, so you know, all these cultures, going in there and learning, trying to learn as much about the culture and trying to apply that to a movie score.
Yeah.
I just find that fascinating.
I think that's wonderful in how you expressed it as being a method composer, because if you think of actors, they immerse themselves in this in the world of the film, and they learn so much as a result, and it's the same with the composer. I haven't considered that before, and I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Is there a particular genre that you can't wait to tackle? I know we've spoken to some composers in the past, and a lot of them have the same answer. A lot of them say the Western. They'd love to compose a big Western theme.
That's right. I've never really thought of that. I would love to do a horror movie. I've tried a few times, and it hasn't worked yet, but you know, I'm sure I'll get there eventually. And I think my love of horror really came from Chris Young. I've never been a huge fan of horror movies, but... you know, watching Chris work and the kind of scores, I mean, Copycat's one of my favorite scores. Ever. It's a fabulous score. So yeah, I'm dying to do a horror movie.
Well, I will be first in line to buy your score and buy a ticket for
definitely.
That film if you compose a horror score. I think that your work it would really be conducive to a horror score. Your sense of experimentation and I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
So you have my ringing endorsement.
Well, thank you.
But thank you so much, Mr. Killian, for joining us tonight and sharing your music and your thoughts on the composing process with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, that's Mr. Mark Killian. The latest score is for the film Traitor, and you can pick it up by clicking on the icon on the homepage there for Traitor. And you can pick up the score that way. Excellent, excellent score. And
yes, it is.
There's some scores, and we're going to talk about this a little later with some of our other guests, and we've discussed it between the two of us, that are not, you know, they're tailor-made for the film, as all scores are.
Right.
And so as a result, on their own, they might not be as enriching or fulfilling to listen to or pleasurable to listen to when you buy the score and just play it at home. You know, but their chief motivation is to serve the film. Traitor is a score that, and all three of the scores tonight, actually, we'll be discussing in depth, definitely work both ways.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the best composers can do that, you know, but it's all contingent.
I think they work most of the time, you know. I would say 99% of the time you can listen to them on their own. I've never had that problem. They're very enjoyable, and I think the movie going experience and the memory of the movie is so enhanced by that.
Right.
Listening to it again, especially There Will Be Blood in the Dark Night and Atonement are three scores that come to mind where the movie going experience is definitely enhanced because of that, and you can't wait to go watch it again.
Right.
Because of that.
Right. Yeah, I don't even know what particular scores I'm thinking of, but you know, there are some scores that to serve the film they need to build and build an intensity, and you know, if you play them at home,
right,
it's you're likely to have a heart attack if you spend too much time with it at home because they're so intense. But these are three exceptionally pleasant scores to listen to. My computer's frozen, Jerry, so about to bring back up the switchboard.
Okay, this has been, I don't know what the BTR thing.
It's not BTR, I think. I think it's my system. I think we're getting a lot of that, just a little bit off topic, we're getting a lot of that hurricane weather.
Are you getting good stuff as well?
Well, a lot of the bands are hitting us.
Okay. Well, if you're getting them, Jason must be getting them as well.
He's in Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, he's in our chat room right now. He wanted you to know that he's in the chat room, so.
Oh, good, good. Glad to see you, Jason.
We love Jason.
Of course. And there's another one out there, too, now, so.
Hannah, right?
Hannah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and her sisters are following right behind.
Yes, because Vicky Cristina Barcelona is right after that.
Right, right, right. Woody Allen's films come through one right after another, just like a hurricane. Okay, but we're getting back up to speed now. I'm just pulling back up the switchboard here.
Okay.
Obviously we're crazy about film composing. Later on, I think maybe in another 3 weeks or so, the three movie geeks, myself, Jerry, and Chris, are going to sit down and we're going to discuss some of our favorite themes and scores and some of our favorite cues, because that's important too, and I want to discuss that this evening in terms of the decision factor in terms of sequencing, in terms of when in a film to put music.
Yeah, well, I think our last guest had that big responsibility for the Clone Wars about speaking of cues and very important cues. He definitely had a big job in front of him to do that.
Yeah, and plus there's something to be said too of when they leave it silent, when they let the scene play on its own.
Just as important.
How do they know when to do that? That's an interesting realm of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as my computer starts becoming a little faster, I'm going to bring up our next guest. And our guest is on the line, so this is terrific. All right, now we're pleased to welcome to the show another exceptional film composing talent, Mr. Kevin Kiner. He's won 3 BMI TV Music Awards for his work in CSI Miami and 3 more for Walker, Texas Ranger. In addition to his highly accomplished resume working in television, Mr. Kiner has composed for many films, including Leprechaun, Madison, and Wing Commander. His new work is in service to the recent film Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Here's a listen to one of the tracks from the score, which you could purchase by clicking the appropriate icon on the homepage that you're on right now. Here it is. Here's a track from The Clone Wars. Please welcome to the show Mr. Kevin Kiner. Mr. Kiner, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to speak to you tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, pleasure is all mine.
I love your score for this film. It's a dynamite piece of work, and I can't wait to discuss it with you. But take me back to when you first were inspired to become a composer, or when you first realized that you were musical.
Well, I guess for all of us, it goes back to childhood. I was always playing in bands and stuff when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always wanted to be a lead guitarist. But, you know, as I got older, I got into jazz a little more than I was into rock, and then I got into classical a bit. And then I started arranging when I was in college, and I found I was, I think, better at that than I was at playing guitar. And then it's kind of a natural just a transition to go from arranging to composing, I think.
Yeah. Were you influenced by any film composers before you gave thought to doing it yourself?
No, really, I wasn't early on. I've been asked that before, and I got into it a little later, probably, you know, in my 20s, early 20s, maybe about the time I was 20 years old or so. And before that, I really hadn't given it any thought, although I do remember in particular I used to watch a show called The Time Tunnel, which I don't think ran for more than 1 or 2 years, but I believe Johnny Williams scored that show.
Oh, wow.
And I do remember that score, which would have been when I was a kid, probably.
I think we all do. I think we all remember that.
Mr. Mark Killian, we just spoke with him, and he came from a jazz background as well, as did John Williams, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What makes that so conducive to film composing, do you think, that jazz groundwork?
I think it more than just to film composing, it's conducive to your growth as a musician. It's one thing to, you know, like as I started playing rock, you know, you're playing whatever, you know, I was sort of into the more complex rock stuff like Yes and Uriah Heep or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, brother. I hear you.
I'm almost embarrassed to say some of the bands.
No, nothing to be embarrassed about.
But I think as you grow as a musician, you get interested in jazz because it's so much more complex harmonically and rhythmically, and there's just so much more that you can delve into the musical vocabulary in the jazz idiom, where rock just doesn't seem to do that, even though, you know, there's a lot to be said for the great grooves in rock. But as far as harmonic sophistication or rhythmic sophistication, you need to go either classical or jazz, I think, to learn about that.
Yeah. Tell me about some of your, once you started to investigate film composition and when you knew that you wanted to pursue that yourself, who are some of the composers that struck you the most, and what are some of your favorite themes from them?
Well, I think first and foremost was John Williams. You know, I think we all remember, back in the days when Superman came out and Star Wars came out and even Jaws, but I remember them, you know, saying that the big Superman pitch was, you'll believe a man can fly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then those special effects were pretty cool and stuff, but the music was just, I in that film and as well as in Star Wars, the music just took both of those films to a different level, and I think we all started to notice it back then, you know.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
Even if you watch, I just screened Star Wars, Superman, a month ago with my kids, and really, the music holds up beautifully. The first film and the special effects, and you know, Christopher Reeves he's wonderful, but the film doesn't hold up nearly as well as the music does. And the music sounds totally current and awesome, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah, and those films are unimaginable without those themes.
Right.
They're so immediately identified with those films and those characters.
Yeah. I'd like to add something to that. I remember when Return of the Jedi came out, and they interviewed John Williams on 2020, and they did a thing where they compared a scene with the music and without the music from The Empire Strikes Back. You take the music out, you really don't have much to work with. And John Williams really is, of those films, he is like, that's who you think of. The music is the first thing that comes to mind. He is the star.
Yeah.
He is really the unsung hero of the whole, of a lot of those films. Without his music, you don't have a lot to work with there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And as I'm sure you guys discuss on your show, there are kind of two schools of thought as far as film scoring. One is for the music to be that kind of a star, and then the other is for the music not to be noticed,
right,
to be completely supportive. And obviously it just depends on what kind of a film you're scoring. If you're
mm-hmm.
scoring Star Wars, it's your job to be the star like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be larger than life. But at the same time, some of my favorite... I love talking about favorite film composers and themes and things. Some of my favorite John Williams music is stuff like The Accidental Tourist, Presumed Innocent, the kind of stuff that's a little more subdued. And, you know, I think Accidental Tourist sounds like something Chopin would have composed, you know. Very versatile. Tell me about the crafting of a theme, because that theme does need to be versatile so you can bring it back up in different situations within the film, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention just quickly, two of my other heroes are Ennio Morricone and John Barry. And again,
this guy can come on the show anytime he wants.
Well, you know, those three, you know, John and John Barry and Ennio, I mean, they're big, huge melody guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me just,
you know, I try to be that way as well. Although in this animation, I had a bunch of different things I had to do, so it was difficult to develop themes as much as I have in other films. But you know, when I sit down to write a theme, I do it on the piano and I give it a lot of thought, and I think we all do. I talked to Joel Goldsmith about this and stuff, and we all tend to stay away from our computers and get a good melody going on the piano, you know, over
right.
a few nights or days or whatever like that.
I have one question just about, speaking of Goldsmith, were you at all influenced by Jerry Goldsmith for your score for The Clone Wars?
Not in particular. I mean, I've always been a huge fan. I love his stuff on the Star Trek films.
Oh, yeah. No, the reason I say this, and I mean this is high praise, my friend, is that some of the chords, and especially, I guess, the Tatooine sequences, remind me of Goldsmith's score from The Wind and the Lion. And I mean that in the highest praise.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm not
one
even
of my
familiar.
Favorite Goldsmith scores. So
I don't even have that soundtrack, but I'd love to hear it sometime.
Yeah.
So I guess I was channeling it, maybe.
Yeah, I think you were. I think you were, because it's there. I think it's there, at least. But, you know,
cool.
It's just...
You have Goldsmith greatness in you, my
yeah.
friend. How did your career get a boost? When did that first big break come for you?
Well, there were a couple of them, but I was conducting on the road, and I got married, and I decided to, you know, get off the road. And a friend of mine had an in to a television production company, and we just sort of they were doing a theme and for just a special, and we went into a recording studio and recorded our version of the theme. They weren't going to use a composer because they didn't have enough money, so we just said we'll do it for whatever you were going to pay for the music library, and so we kind of spec'd it out, and we got that gig. It was a bloopers show. Then that producer, he got a series and took me on. And from that series, the series was called The Foul-Ups, Bleeps, and Blunders with Don Rickles and Steve Lawrence. I was doing Spike Jones music back then, you know, with slide whistles and trombones and things, crazy, you know, wacky music for that. But from there were like three other producers who went to get their own shows within about 6 months, and they all took me with them. And one of them turned out to be a connection to the Salkinds, and
wow.
and that was my first dramatic show was The Adventures of Superboy, and that was my first exposure to, you know, writing in the John Williams kind of style. And I must say it was a baptism by fire back then for me.
I bet. But this is amazing, because for you to have been so influenced by John Williams, and here you are now, and your latest work being The Clone Wars, it had to have been very intimidating for you to follow in those footsteps. First of all, tell me how the Clone Wars opportunity came about for you. Did you push to get that job, or did they approach you?
I have no idea how they got my CD. I imagine it's, I have a really good agent, and somehow they chose my CD and a bunch of us were chosen to audition for the gig. So, you know, once they'd heard our reels, they gave us part of a 10-minute snip of the show, and we all came back and wrote whatever we thought we should, and they chose my score. So it was an audition process, and it was cool because in that kind of a process, you see that you connect. I think I connected with Dave Filoni, the director, as well as George, who was very involved in the music, especially at the beginning of the TV series, which, you know, it was a TV series before he hadn't even decided to make it a movie at that time.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What were some of his directions for you? What kind of direction did he want to take the music?
Well, first of all, I think he really wanted to explore ethnic music. And I've spoken about this before, but there's been a lot of science fiction music done over the years, and it's been fantastic science fiction music. But one of the things that I think he wanted to see is if we could create some of the sense of mystery and otherworldliness using ethnic sounds rather than your standard, sci-fi chords and orchestra that's been, you know, kind of done for so long. And that was totally his concept. And my thing was, and still is, I love using those ethnic sounds. I just, his concept was every planet would have its own ethnicity. You know, we'd have an Irish or a, but in fact, I just finished doing one that takes place on a planet that has an Irish theme. Or Peruvian or Egyptian or whatever, but I wanted to keep the orchestra involved as well because I think if we just totally only went ethnic, it wouldn't quite work in terms of the score. You know, it still needs to have the emotion that the orchestra brings.
So do you live with this different world music for a while? I mean, do you kind of soak up that musical language from all of these different regions of the world to inspire the themes that you write for the Clone Wars and the different nationalities that you're trying to represent?
Yeah, that's what I do. I'll find out, like, we had a Bulgarian, and George, I think, picks these. I don't know where he gets these ideas. And so I really hadn't been exposed to the world of Bulgarian women's choirs, but you know, it just wasn't something that was in my iPod, so I had to go out and find it and listen. And I actually found people who sang and go on the road as in these choirs, and they came and sang for me. So yeah, I really, that's one of the things that makes this gig very different. And you know, I think I put a few more hours in because of that, because I have to do my homework on that.
Oh yeah, this would be challenging for me. I mean, I'm just slightly musical. I don't have the sense that you have, obviously, about these things. But if you're immersing yourself in this kinds of different world music, and you're writing themes for some characters that Mr. Williams wrote so indelibly for, how do you keep those themes and out of your head? Is it a challenge not to find yourself replicating that theme and not doing something original on your own, because you can't separate that particular theme from that content?
Well, I think that's part of the challenge with this gig musically, is that there are a lot of balls in the air. There's the drama of the scene itself, which is, you know, that's basic film scoring. Then there's the ethnicity of each planet. Then you have your character themes that have been developed either by myself or by John Williams. And I have to just kind of choose when to bring in those character themes. And I may bring them in you know, during an ethnic moment, or maybe with like an Irish flute or something like that, if it's appropriate to bring the character's theme in. Most of the time, though, the ethnic element is used to kind of set the vibe of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to the orchestra and we use the orchestra for our standard character themes, the way you would in any other film score.
Yeah. And when you're sitting down and you're watching the finished film, tell me about the process of determining where you need music, where it would be more effective without it. Is that a difficult process at times? Or is it obvious?
No, I think if you ever hear any of John Williamson's interviews, I think he refers to himself as writing an opera. I know he talks about that in Superman and Star Wars,
right,
both. But pretty much, if there is footage running, I'm playing music. That's how you decide what's going on, in at least in our, especially because it's an animation as well. So there are very, very few moments that don't have music. I think the
right
challenge with that is to know when to kind of settle down so that, you know, the audience ears can take at least a little breather, even if you're just, you know, padding a little bit or just taking a moment where the music's not so obtrusive.
Right, exactly. Like I said, let me repeat to our listeners out there, you can purchase the Clone Wars score. If you click on the icon on the homepage there, it'll take you directly to the Amazon page where you can purchase it. TV, you've done TV work as well, correct?
Yes.
What's the different discipline involved in TV as opposed to film?
You know, I just think it's much more similar than people think it is. The schedule tends to be a little more accelerated in television.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've had films that have come in, you know, and I've had 3 weeks to do them, so that's pretty much just as fast as I have to write a television show, you know. Obviously the biggest thing is that usually you have a better budget with features, and you know, I got to go to Prague with a 91-piece orchestra for Clone Wars.
Wow.
So, you know, we don't have that budget for every episode of the Clone Wars TV series, but we actually do have a good budget, and we still use a fairly large orchestra in the TV show as well.
Mm. So when you're in that studio and you're playing with the City of Prague orchestra, it's amazing, amazing musicians. What kind of relationship do you prefer the director to be there with you to kind of give you a give and take and a dialogue about what works or what needs to be modified?
I think these days, a lot of the time, the director has heard a mock-up that we tend to be doing these days. So it used to not be that way. Used to be just, you know, the director would hear a piano and the piano version of the score, and the first time he'd hear it with an orchestra would be on the scoring stage. Nowadays, we tend to mock up the cues, and they hear a pretty accurate version of it. So there aren't quite as many surprises, I think, for the directors as there used to be. And a lot of the times, especially in Prague, now you're, you know, dealing with a different language. So we have a translator there next to the conducting podium, and she translates everything that I say after we'll run the piece through. But most of the time, at least in my experience, the relationship with the director tends to happen in my studio back home and while he's listening to the mock-ups and how I'm treating each cue, and then doing the orchestra is more just making those cues really sound great and have the orchestral sensibility and the realness that only a true orchestra can give it.
Yeah, it's a great, great sound, great full sound. Is there a genre that you would love to compose for, a dream project perhaps?
You know, I think I've sort of just in the last couple of years, I've had two great dream projects. I mean, this one continues to be, because I'm scoring an episode of Clone Wars every two weeks or so.
Wow.
And it's just a great experience. I mean, it's really broadening my ethnic vocabulary as well as the sort of classical soundtrack kind of vocabulary, because I'm really immersing myself in the classics. I've been going to Hollywood Bowl rehearsals and just kind of, you know, listening to a lot of classical music, because, you know, doing one of these shows every 2 weeks, you can get a little bit stale. So
mm-hmm.
it's good to just get back to the basics and do that. So as far as a dream project, I mean, this is a great dream project.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty much as good as it gets.
Yeah, really.
I'm sure.
I have one other that I finished about, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. It was called The Other Side of Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different from this score. It's very Americana, kind of a feel-good score, something like you would hear Tom Newman gets assignments for. And it was about a missionary in Tonga. It's a true story. Also recorded that in Prague. That was my first experience in Prague, actually. And I just, the director was a guy I'd grown up with, been very good friends since the first grade, and he wrote and directed it, and we had a really good kind of chemistry and sense of direction, and I'm very proud of that score as well. That soundtrack has some of my better melodies on it.
Mm. What's that director's name again?
Mitch Davis.
Yeah, Mitch Davis, okay. So are you working on are you just wrapped up with the Clone Wars series? Are you looking at another film project that you're working on soon?
No, currently I'm scoring CSI Miami. I co-write that with Jeff Cardone. And again, that's a very different style. It's a very electronica kind of a score.
Yeah.
So that's fun, too. That's one of the fun things that you get to do instead of just being stuck in one style all the time. You know?
Right.
That's really cool, yeah. I think. So, yeah, I'm doing that in Clone Wars. It's a pretty busy day every day.
Well, sir, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're crazy about this soundtrack for the Clone Wars. And
well,
I urge all of our...
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. It's been
thank
a great
you,
pleasure
sir.
To speak with you, sir.
My privilege.
Okay. Have a good evening, sir.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Kevin Kiner. The new score is for Star Wars The Clone Wars, and you can click on that icon, and it'll take you directly to Amazon, where you can purchase the score yourself and know that we're not just talking nonsense here. It really is great. A great, exciting piece of work. How's the chat room going?
Oh, the chat room's alive. You know, we have some, you know, not only do we have Jason, but we also have John Moody from Independent Corners in there. So, and we have Mike from Horror Movie Fans Radio. So we got all the BTR celebrities are in there.
Awesome. And if you're out there listening live, there is a chat room, as we've just been referring to. If you click on the chat available icon on your homepage, it'll take you directly to it, and you can converse with other film fans about your favorite film scores and the interviews that we're currently conducting. And we're ready for our next guest. Composer Andrew Lockington is our third and final guest tonight. His latest work for the recent film, Journey to the Center of the Earth 3D, is a rousing adventure score and a highly pleasurable listen. His other scores include the films Skinwalkers, Cake, and How She Move. It's a fantastic talent, and it is a great pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. Andrew Lockington. Mr. Lockington, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, I'm crazy about your work on this soundtrack. It's just a great piece of music. Tell me how you were influenced by music when you realized you were musical, and who were those influences on you?
That's a great question. You know, I have to say, not any one person in particular. I'd say just music in general. I mean, I can remember getting that Van Halen album, Jump, and that got me excited about music. You know, John Williams and, you know, growing up, Star Wars era, Indiana Jones era, that was something that really excited me about music. And I'd say that's when I first started imagining a future writing music for film, potentially, believe it or not, at a young age, hearing that music, E.T., you know, hearing this music and having an emotional response to it and realizing that that was something that really was an integral part of who I was and what I wanted to do. So, yeah, I'd have to say, you know, I'm one of those people that listens to everything. And even I'll often say to directors when I'm working on a film, you know, tell me the music you like, tell me the stuff that you think of, even if it's simply a bass sound or, you know, a sound of a snare drum or, you know, a melody or whatever it is. I try to get them to tell me all of their musical influences and all the things they like, because there's often different clues in there as to try to decode what they're looking for musically.
Right. You know, you talk about that, and my brain has gone dead. I can't think of the term for it. When they use other people's work during scenes to give you a sense of feeling.
Temp music. Is that what you're
temp,
saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What,
yes.
Is that helpful or harmful?
Oh, both. Both. Extremely helpful and extremely harmful. It really varies project to project. I have to say, starting out, it was the kiss of death, because you're working on a film, and everyone's early films, your budgets are very limited, and you start getting things temped with, you know, Tom Newman that he did for $1 million, or, you know, these ridiculous scores that are really great works, and also, you know, people have heard them for 5 years, and it's definitely ingrained in their brains, and you're playing somebody a melody for the first time, and they listen to it once, and they say, I don't know, it just doesn't emotionally affect me the same as that thing I've heard 750 times.
Because they're married to it. Yeah.
Because they're married to it. So that's definitely a disadvantage. The other side of the coin is, you know, you can end up working on films on the scoring process a long time. You know, movies these days, the amount of money that goes into some of the bigger films, nobody's going to put something at the door and say, oh, well, we've done our best and we'll improve next time around. You know, when you've got $60, $80, $100 million on the line, they, you know, people's jobs are on the line and they have to get it right. So
right.
The editing process can go on a long time. And by that nature, if you're the composer and you've already started, the composing process can go on a long time. So through all the trials and tribulations and, you know, the going down different musical roads, it's quite nice to do a lot of that experimentation and try and hone in on a direction through temp music as opposed to writing numerous scores to the same film. And I've done it both ways, and I definitely prefer the temp music approach.
So tell me, did you go to school for film composition?
I did, yeah. I studied music composition at a university about an hour outside Toronto, where I grew up, and it was a great experience. And it was a very small program. There were only, you know, 4 or 5 students per year, so it was very close association with a professor, lots of one-on-one time, and it was a great experience. I have to say, one of the surprises of my university time, my 4 years there, was we had a mandatory choral class that everybody had to either sing in the choir or play in the orchestra. So we had this choir of 400 students that, you know, we had, I think, 3 or 4 practices a week. And, you know, it was one of those things I dreaded my first year. It would always seem to coincide with pub night on Thursday night. So all my residence buddies were out drinking, and I was singing Berlioz. But what I realized is, here I was, you know, singing baritone, singing bass, singing tenor parts, and reading these 4-part harmonies of all the great composers, and really understanding that a lot of these chord structures have these melodic intertwining lines within them, that singing them and actually focusing in on one line in particular just opened a whole new world to me composition-wise. So it was a very fascinating experience, and, you know, by the middle of my first year, I had already recognized it as an incredible learning tool, and it got me excited about a lot of music that I was never excited about before, and taught me a lot about four-part harmonies and melodies and the movement of melodies and the exchange of themes within different parts of an ensemble, an orchestra, or a choral group, and it was a great experience.
Mm. So you apprenticed under Michael Dana, am I pronouncing it correctly?
You are, yeah.
What was the tremendous talent himself? What was that experience like?
It was, I mean, I have to say, I couldn't have been a luckier person to have gone through that. And the other side of the coin is I was a really good assistant. So I think it was a mutually beneficial relationship. But he's an amazing talent, and his brain definitely thinks about music in a different way than mine did at that time. I had spent 4 years in school studying classical music and very much studying orchestral music. And, you know, my brain was very much in the orchestral Americana score, the John Williams, the Tom Newman, that kind of feel. And Michael, you know, definitely opened the world to me to all these other kinds of music, these not only other instruments, but other structures. And, you know, he's one of those composers that really looks at the structure of music from other cultures as opposed to just the instruments. And he really writes within that world, and not from a Western musical standpoint. So it was really interesting. And actually, it's interesting for me to have done Journey to the Center of the Earth and some more orchestral, more Americana-type scores, because it feels like I've come full circle again after being in this other world musically for so long. And it's nice to sort of come home to the style of music and the genre that I was initially enthused by, but definitely coming into it with a broader knowledge of music in general.
Mm. So what kind of how did you assist him? What kind of work did you do with him, and what were those projects that you guys collaborated on?
Yeah, there were a couple of films we co-wrote. I spent a lot of time, though, just helping him with arrangement and, you know, general assistant. I did some conducting for him, orchestration. You know, it was a fly in a wall sometimes. Mm. I was getting coffee, stringing guitars. I was so thrilled to be in that world and actually get to fly all over the world recording, you know, orchestras, some of the best orchestras in the world, and get that experience. I was willing to do anything. But, another big part of what I did for him was research. That's sort of one of the early things that I started doing for him and have carried that on in my own work, is when he gets a film, he immediately, once he has a direction, goes to the libraries, starts listening to music, starts researching different instruments, different scales, different ragas, different everything, just trying to really immerse his head in a musical direction that really fits with the film. And that's something I did with him a lot, and I've carried on doing, and it's one of the great things I take away from that experience.
You know, the composers that we've spoken to in the past and on tonight's show,
mm-hmm.
they've spoken to, obviously, what you're talking about, the research in terms of investigating world music, et cetera, but there's also an element there where you are an assistant storyteller as a composer, just as every element of the film production team is. Was that something that you had to hone your skills in terms of reading a film? Because it's not just like watching a film just blasé, like you just go to the theater on Friday night to have a good time. You really have to decipher what is this scene, this moment trying to express, and how do I express that musically. Was that a difficult process for you to try to learn those skills?
You know, I think that kind of thing for film composers, I mean, everyone has a natural, I tend to think everyone naturally scores different scenes in their life, and whether it's with a popular song or, you know, if people are composers, you sort of sometimes hear melodies, you know, whether it's to a film that doesn't have music or whether it's you walking down the street and, you know, listening to your iPod and it seems to be scoring your life. The harder part, and the thing that took me a long time to, and I mean, I guess we're always all always working on it, is really looking at film scoring as the macro approach as opposed to the micro approach. I mean, writing a 2-minute cue that's going to be an Oscar clip is definitely a challenge, but writing a score on the whole that will evolve and will help tell the story, that will plant the seeds of these themes in people's heads without them getting sick of them, and needing them to really reach their maximum effectiveness at the end of the film or at the climactic moment of the film, that's a real challenge, and that's something that takes a long time to master, if at all. But that's definitely what I've discovered to be one of the biggest challenges of film scoring. And you're absolutely right. It has to do with helping to tell the story, parallel telling the story, and even tying together elements of the story that sometimes the director isn't even conscious of. You know, something
right.
We might have done subconsciously, and you can tie characters together or events together. So I think I'm sure you've talked a lot about themes. I think a lot of it comes down to theme writing and evolving themes and almost tricking your audience into feeling like each piece of music that they're hearing they've not heard before, but feel like they have a relationship with those melodies and those themes.
Yeah. What is your process like? When do you generally like to come in on a project, and what do you have to understand about the piece before you those few notes hit your before you're inspired to write those first notes?
I sort of have two approaches. I have the really great film school approach that if I'm ever a professor, I'll stand up and tell people, which is, you know, I sit there and I watch the film a few times over and I try to come up with the underlying themes of the story, not mm-hmm. thinking about music at all, but try to figure out what are the story themes that I want to highlight and what are some things that I can tie together. And I really try to avoid character themes. I call it sort of the Peter and the Wolf. I think there's some great scores that do that, and ultimately I do end up having some character themes, but I try to go a little deeper than that. I try to come up with themes that are, you know, sort of relationship themes, like in Journey there was a theme that started out with Max, the boy's long-lost father, but I was more trying to make it a theme that was the relationship that he had with his father, the relationship he was missing, and that
mm-hmm.
that sort of father figure theme was passed on to the uncle. It was also there sometimes when the female character was sort of acting more as a mothering, consoling character in his life. So I try to not pigeonhole myself too much into character themes in that way. But so that's sort of the film school approach. The truth is I often will sit down and the very first time I'm watching a film, I'll just, you know, turn on my dictaphone, or I often phone myself, sadly, and leave a message on my machine, and I'll just start
right.
playing stuff. And I don't necessarily know what the theoretical film school approach is. I just start throwing melodies out there and seeing, you know, and I don't even go back and listen to them again often. I just throw them down and walk away. And
right.
what ends up happening is I end up editing myself a week or two later and listening to some of these things I've played. And a lot of them I don't remember playing, but just sort of seeing if there's anything that I subconsciously threw down in my first reaction to the film that I can now finesse and work, you know, into the film school approach.
Well, Journey to the Center of the Earth is it's a fantastic, sweeping score, and it's a lot of music. Tell me what instruments you heard when you were first formulating these themes, and why.
Thanks. You know, when I first came on, one of the things that I was really excited about doing about this project was I knew right away this is almost a retro adventure score. This is going right back to those films that, you know, inspired me to become a film composer. So I knew right away it was an orchestral score. I knew it would probably have choir, and I knew that, you know, the themes would be strings and brass. And so knowing that right off the top, it was trying to figure out what are some elements that I can work into this to make it a little more interesting, you know, maybe a little less down the middle, because, you know, the retro thing, the nice thing is that the whole retro approach to scoring has sort of been out of date the last little while, and it's just in the last few years that people are starting to think of themes in that way and sort of, you know, I guess embrace that genre for what it is. So it was really fun to have license to do that, because that was definitely what the film called for.
Mm-hmm.
I knew right away it would be orchestral, and I think I was writing, one of the very first things I wrote was this French horn theme, which ends up being the main theme, the journey theme, as we call it.
Yeah.
Just sitting at a piano with my right hand, just messing around with different rhythms and trying to come up with something that was memorable. The first version of that theme was actually quite a bit longer and more complex. It sort of went over an 8 to 12 bar structure instead of a 4 bar structure. And when I started playing it against the film moves so quickly, and there's so few places to really belt out a theme like that, I realized I had to come up with something that was a little more compact, so that it wasn't feeling like we were hearing the first 3 or 4 bars of a theme and then getting cut off.
Right.
So that was one of the challenges. And what I really did after that, once I knew that's sort of the approach I was going to take, I thought, you know, one of the very first things I did is I went and I listened to all sorts of Icelandic music, because I thought, okay, here's a cultural reference, something I can maybe grab onto and find something interesting there to, you know, sort of a counterpoint to the orchestral theme that I'm working on.
Right.
And I very quickly realized that wasn't going anywhere. So I don't know if you guys have ever listened to any Icelandic music. It's really amazing stuff, but it's definitely not mainstream.
Well, that's one of my favorite tracks off the soundtrack is actually the track titled Iceland.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's beautiful.
Oh, well, thanks. It has zero Icelandic influence whatsoever, I can proudly say. I actually recorded this singer, this beautiful singer whose name escapes me at the moment. Otherwise, I'd be happy to give her a plug. But she, I recorded her and had her sing some Icelandic folk songs, and it was really great stuff and really nice. And I said to the director, I said, this is really good stuff. I'm not quite sure how to use it. And he said, well, I'm sure the money was well spent knowing that that was the wrong direction to go in. And it was clear that he also did not think it was a good direction to go in, but appreciated my effort in looking to it. So I quickly realized that was not a direction that was going to work with the film. And then I thought, as I was playing around, I had done a film called Skinwalkers, and I had recorded a taiko ensemble. A man named Kiyoshi Nagata, excuse me, has a taiko ensemble that is here in Toronto half the year and travels internationally the other half of the year. And I remembered he had these really big, hollowed-out old log drums that, you know, daikos, as they're called, that were part of his taiko ensemble. And I remember looking at some of the early footage and some of the sketches for Journey and seeing these old stumps that exist in this jungle in the center of the earth. And it immediately kind of hit me that here I was looking for the theoretical approach and literally just the thuds of these old wooden organic sounds was something that seemed to really fit the film.
Right. Speaking of fitting the film, when you compose... You compose in service of that film. So, what are your feelings on the soundtracks, on the actual CDs that we as music lovers and consumers pick up? Because you're not. Is it difficult to resist the urge to compose so that it sounds good on the CD as opposed to good for the film?
It isn't. Probably. I mean, your head is so in in the space of the film. At the end of the day, I mean, I have some scores that I think work really well with the film, but aren't really listening program music in the same sense. So I think our job is, as film composers, what sort of defines our job as being different than a regular composer is that we're one half, I like to think one half, but we're one part of a general experience, you know, a visual audio experience that the audience member will leave that theater having been influenced but not knowing to what degree they were influenced either way. So
yeah.
I think they really need to realize that we're trying to create a combined audiovisual experience, and there are places where you make musical choices that are definitely work for the storytelling of a film, but might not be musically the choice you would make if you were writing music for sonic reasons alone.
Right.
So the great thing is Journey, due to the fact that we had so much visual effects and the music was being recorded before we had locked picture, I was asked if I would be willing to record the orchestra stem, so record the brass separate from the strings, separate from the percussion, separate from the choir. And in doing that, when we went back to do the CD, I was able to bring up some of the stems and sort of do a little submix for the CD that made more sense from a CD point of view, whereas there were places where the themes were a little quieter in the film, I was able to bring them up to their normal level for the CD.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal score, and I highly recommend people pick up the score immediately if you're a film score fan. It's a beautiful experience to listen to. Are there genres that you know that the music has to work harder? I mean, I would think that adventure would be one, and certainly the horror film. I mean, you talked about Skinwalkers, where music is going to be a lot more integral part of the film and in terms of achieving its effect, do you think?
I don't know. You know, it depends on the film. One of the things that comes in to play in films is sometimes when the composer's being hired, they have problem areas. So there are areas that people go, well, this isn't working the way I really wanted it to. So the director will say, can the music try to make it more this or more of that, and you can do that to a certain extent. And I think that's a challenge. It's a challenge sometimes to do what best serves the film, and also do something that makes sense from a score point of view. I did a romantic comedy film a few years ago, and more than a few years ago now actually. But there was not a lot of chemistry between the two main characters who are supposed to end up together in the end. And so the music really had to just milk every little blink and every little thing. And it was, musically, it was really, I felt I took one for the team in a few places just to try to sell this romantic relationship. So that was definitely a real challenge. From the point of logistics and time, definitely action music takes a long time to write, you know. If you want to write a nice solo piano piece, 3-minute solo piano piece, it really takes about 3 minutes. It's the right 3 minutes, but
right.
You know, you can wing that off. But really intricate string writing and brass writing can take a long time to assemble just even a minute of material. So that definitely that kind of action adventure stuff can really take a long time.
I bet. We're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you about what's coming up for you. You have a project that's called for a film called 1 Week.
Yeah, that's a film I did early this year, right after I finished Journey, actually. And it's it's getting its world premiere at the Toronto Film Festival a week tomorrow.
Wow, great.
Yeah, so it's a great film. It's I did it with director Mike McGowan, who I've done a couple of films with. He did St. Ralph. In 2004, which has a really good cult following and is a great film.
Yeah.
And then I'm actually headed to L.A. in 2 days for the playback on a movie called City of Ember.
Yeah,
a film Tom Hanks' company Playtone produced it in conjunction with Fox Walden, and the director is Gil Kenan, who was the director of Monster House and comes from the Robert Zemeckis, Steven Spielberg world.
Wow.
So it's a really great film. It's based on the book by Jean Dupreau, or Jean Dupreau, of the same name. It's a fantastic story, fantastic premise, and the film just turned out great.
That's the one with Bill Murray.
Yeah,
exactly.
Bill Murray, I think, is the mayor of the city, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's a really, it's a good film, and it was, you know, it was such a dream come true. We recorded it at Abbey Road over, I guess, 2.5 weeks. I recorded and mixed it over 2.5 weeks, and it was an amazing experience. We had, it's the choir element is bigger in this than it was in Journey. And we had a choir called the Bach Choir who sang on Kingdom of Heaven and the Chronicle of Narnia films, and these guys were amazing. It was it was such a treat. My arms are still black and blue from pinching myself. So, no, it's it was a really fun score to do, and it's different than Journey. I mean, it has the same... It's got a lot of drive to it, but it has... It's a very deep emotional story. So the music was able to go into that emotion a little more, and it was really fun to write.
I bet. I know that we're low on time. I'm so sorry for this, but I have to ask you. You mentioned Abbey Road. Do you sense the history there when you walk in those doors? Because that's hallowed ground, right there. I mean, so much legendary musical events have occurred in that studio.
Yeah. I don't know how old you are, but did you ever see the Wayne's World film?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
The whole "I'm not worthy." Mm-hmm. Definitely, I've done that in front of.
You
Abbey
did that,
Road
okay?
Many times. No, it's funny. You walk into that place, and that place is just a tourist. It's like tourist flypaper. It's the
uh-huh.
number of people. You know, outside the fence, it's like 3 or 4 people thick. People trying to get pictures, and everyone always asks you, "Are you famous?" It's like, no, I'm not famous, not even remotely. But it's an amazing place, and you know, the history there. I mean, every musician or composer that I have ever revered has touched that place. So it's pretty humbling to walk into and work in a place like that.
Oh wow! Well, Mr. Lockington, I love your work. We love your work here on the show, and we appreciate you being on the show so much.
Well, thanks, guys. Yeah, my pleasure. It was a lot of fun to talk to you.
And keep us updated on future projects, and you're welcome back anytime.
Cheers. I appreciate it. I look forward to it.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Andrew Lockington, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Skinwalkers. It's just two of his many scores.
Right.
That you can pick up today. We enjoyed bringing the show to you. I love film composing.
Oh, yeah. The whole month, dude. We get the whole month to do this. We have the whole... I think we're off the... No one
yeah.
can hear us.
Well, yeah.
Until the archive.
Right, until the archive. Let me just say, Wednesday we have, if you can type this in the chat room.
Yeah.
We have Mark Snow, composer of Dun 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 from The X-Files. Was that a good...
That was good. I couldn't have done it better myself. So
right.
I
you
think
knew,
that was
automatically,
awesome.
Automatically you knew what it was.
Yeah, I just knew. Even if you didn't say Mark Snow, I would have known.
Exactly, exactly. And then next Sunday we have composer Jeff Beal, who just did the new Ed Harris movie, Appaloosa.
Have you seen that trailer?
I have, and I've heard
it's
the score, too.
It's incredible-looking film. Incredible-looking.
I got the score, too. Yeah, I'm cool like that.
Yeah, you are cool like that.
It's a great score, too. I mean, it's just...
I can imagine. I mean, he's got good taste when it comes, like, with Pollock. I mean, Ed Harris, he knows what he's doing, so I don't...
Yeah.
I don't question his motives or his choices at all.
Yeah, and he composed Pollock as well.
Yeah.
And Pacino's film, so we're definitely going to talk about Pacino.
Yeah, well, we you folks, you heard it here. We're going to talk a lot about Pacino's film, so...
Exactly, exactly.
You just heard that here at 7:33 Sunday night.
I've enjoyed it, man. thanks for being with me once again.
No problem.
And we'll see everyone Wednesday night.
Wednesday night.
For joining us, everybody.
Mark Snow. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys. Are you a filmmaker looking for a great score for your next movie? Well, look no further than Michael McCormack, the composer whose works you hear at the opening and the closing of every episode of Movie Geeks United. This is a phenomenal talent, and you can hear more samples of his work at michaelmccormickmusic.com
or on his MySpace page, which you can access through the Movie Geeks United Top Friends.